Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the Missoula investigation into whether a cop car was actually shot last week, the Dr. Oz show and MTV airing episodes about missing and murdered Indigenous women, and clean energy in Helena. It's Wednesday, February 26th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. On Monday, the world celebrated NBA superstar Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna, who died last month with seven others in a helicopter crash. Kay Erickson reports the Lakers legend got to spend some time in Montana.
Some 2,000 people packed the Staples Center in Los Angeles, the home of the LA Lakers, known as the house Kobe built, for the two-hour tribute. Current L.A. Lakers general manager Rob Pelinka was Bryant's former agent and best friend. He remembered a vacation their two families took in Montana.
This was the case when my family and the Bryants went on a camping, or I should say glamping trip to Montana. We canoed and rode horses, went fly fishing and river rafting, and rode on a stagecoach to a campfire dinner under the stars. At each turn, Kobe made everything an adventure, especially for the kids. And of course, with all the wilderness activities we did, they had to be done to the nth degree. If it was fly fishing, we had to learn to tie our own flies and fish standing in the stream with heavy wader boots on. No shortcuts. Kobe's enthusiasm and joy for all things life made that trip one for a lifetime.
The audio, courtesy of the LA Lakers. Since Bryant's death last month, many in Montana involved in college basketball and the media remember the player, Olympic gold medalist, businessman, coach, friend, and family man with fondness. I'm Kay Erickson with Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Montana's Attorney General Office is joining a multi-state investigation into the vaping product manufacturer Juul Labs. Attorney General Tim Fox said in a press release that e-cigarette use among young people in the state has reached epidemic levels. Juul's website says its mission is to combat underage use of their products and provide an alternative to cigarettes for adults. But Montana's top law enforcement office says the 39-state investigation of the company will look into those claims and review potential targeting of youth with its products. The Attorney General's office says the investigation will also look at statements made by Juul related to the risks, safety, and product effectiveness as a smoking cessation device. Juul is largely owned by Altera, the owner of Marlboro Cigarettes. Earlier this year, President Donald Trump signed a bill into law raising the age requirement to buy tobacco products from 18 to 21. A federal judge in Missoula has ruled a shareholder of the state's largest utility cannot compel the company to consider his clean energy proposal at an upcoming annual meeting. Kayla DeRoche reports.
Lovando-based attorney Tom Tosdell sued Northwestern Energy to include his proposal for review and vote at the company's April shareholder meeting after Northwestern declined to put it in its meeting packet. Judge Dana Christensen ruled in Northwestern's favor Tuesday. Tosdell says he respects the judge's decision, even though he's disappointed and disagrees.
Yeah, here's the deal. I've learned over the years that the one thing that corporations listen to the most is money. And this shareholder's proposal was a way to get the investors in the company to voice their opinion on coal-fired electricity generation that's spewing so much carbon dioxide into the air.
Tosdell's proposal called for Northwestern to replace its coal-fired generation at the Colstrip Power Plant with renewable energy by the end of 2025. His lawsuit claimed that he's held the necessary number of shares for more than a year, and the company is therefore legally required to present his proposals to other shareholders for review. In a summary judgment, Judge Christensen wrote, "While the question is close, Northwestern made a stronger case in its argument that the vote is trying to micromanage a resource planning decision and therefore interferes with ordinary business operations." Northwestern spokesperson Jody Black wrote in a statement that the ruling is a, quote, "positive for Northwestern Energy's shareholders and the company's customers," unquote. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Missoula police still have no conclusive evidence that a city patrol car was actually shot last week. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports on the ongoing investigation that's raising more questions than answers.
Hard facts are few and far in between when it comes to last Wednesday's reported shooting of a patrol car on the 400 block of Missoula's Woody Street. MPD Interim Chief Mike Collier says several witnesses reported hearing a loud pop before the officer's rear window shattered.
One of the witnesses ironically told us, "I've been shot at." And she says, "I know what it sounds like to be shot at, and that was a gunshot.
Collier says a thorough investigation turned up nothing to suggest a weapon was actually fired last week. No bullet casings or fragments were found. A study of the window glass itself was also inconclusive. The entire vehicle was even x-rayed twice.
Looking for bullet fragments, and we've not located any fragments in the backseat of that car. Visually examined it to see if there was a projectile that, went in and bounced off something inside the car, and haven't located that either.
Investigators have also taken structural failure into account.
We also talked to glass experts who are just in that industry, auto glass, and they said it's possible that you do have these type of manufactured defects that pop and shatter in place, leaving a void, which is similar to what we saw in our car that day.
Collier says an out-of-state friend says just such a thing happened to him last week. He has no regrets about deploying fully armed tactical teams downtown, locking down Missoula City Hall and several county buildings, and closing streets in a 5-block radius surrounding the courthouse.
It is all about ensuring safety at that point. Like I said, the safety first and foremost of any uninvolved third party in the area. The safety of our officers, to have the right people there with the right training and equipment to handle that mission.
Collier says he erred on the side of public safety, even if that meant inconveniencing the public for a while. The investigation, while so far inconclusive, is ongoing. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
The story of a Northern Cheyenne woman will be featured in two national pop culture shows this week. Nikki Ouellette reports the Dr. Oz show and MTV are airing episodes about Hannah Harris, who went missing and was murdered in 2013.
Family remembers Hannah Harris for her spontaneity, mischievousness, and smile in an episode of MTV's True Life Crime series set to air Wednesday.
You know, everyone loved her. She had a smile. Oh man, her smile.
The 21-year-old mother went missing from Lame Deer on the 4th of July, 2013. Two people were later imprisoned for their roles in her murder. MTV News reporter Domity Pongo frames Harris's disappearance within the missing and murdered Indigenous women movement.
Fear was growing that Hannah could be the latest victim.
Harris's family, along with reporter Pongo, also appeared on the Dr. Oz show this week. Blackfeet documentary filmmaker Ivan MacDonald told YPR that telling stories like Harris's on shows with such large national audiences can be a form of healing for families.
We often hear from a lot of our families that the families we work with, that storytelling is some form of justice. It might not be justice in the legal sense, but there's this sense of spiritual justice that their loved one's story will be known.
MacDonald says exposure can be helpful for families and the MMIW movement, but he adds shallow reporting or sensationalism can cause deep emotional harm for families who are asked to repeat some of the most traumatic moments of their lives again and again.
You know, as these stories become more readily covered or widely covered, I think that's something that we should strive for, is to tell these stories in the most respectable way.
He adds MTV may be reaching an audience for whom Harris's story is news.
I'm excited to see it and kind of see, you know, how it kind of comes across from an agency who may not have historically had that connection or connotation to really kind of presenting this kind of topic.
Harris's story airs on MTV Wednesday evening. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
A second Montana city has set a goal to turn away from fossil fuels by 2030. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports the city of Helena approved a resolution Monday night to move toward 100% renewable electricity.
Motion carries 5-0.
The five members of the City Commission unanimously backed the measure that aims to shift the energy makeup powering the Helena area.
The resolution states the goal of moving Helena's roughly 39% fossil fuel-based electricity supply to zero in the next decade, as concerns mount over projected impacts of climate change. A crowd packed the city commission chamber ahead of the vote. With standing room only, around 30 people lined up to voice their support of the electricity goal. No one spoke in opposition. Bob Adams, a longtime Helena resident and seasonal park ranger at Glacier National Park, said he's part of the generation that brought on this mess.
So thank you very much for bringing this forward. This is the right way to go. 10 years, an ambitious window, but more power to you.
The Helena resolution sets a citywide target of, quote, 100% clean, renewable electricity for the Helena community by 2030, unquote. The resolution includes a call for the city to work with utility companies serving the area to supply electricity with renewable energy sources like wind and solar power. It also pledges the local government to invest in renewable and energy efficiency projects on city-owned properties. Helena Mayor Wilmot Collins asked the crowd in the council chambers to challenge the city to reach its goal.
This is what happens when the community can come together and say, this is what we want. But I want to caution you to know that this is only the beginning.
Len Broberg, a professor of environmental studies at the University of Montana, says it's easier for smaller cities with less energy demands to mandate strict carbon rules. But he says even smaller markets can make a dent in global emissions.
In lots of ways, these smaller actions can add up to a much bigger picture.
Broberg says cities like Helena and Missoula, which became the first local government in Montana to adopt carbon reduction plans last year, will have to prove how realistic their goals are. But he says ambitious goals, considering what's at risk, are a good start. Diana Mineta works on Missoula County's climate change projects. She says not enough is being done to address the global threat of greenhouse gas emissions' impact on the environment.
I don't feel like it's been sufficient at the federal and state levels, and so that's really left it to local governments.
But Mineta says there's only so much local governments like Missoula and Helena can do.
Ultimately, I believe that getting to 100% clean electricity will require more systemic change, and that we'll be most successful if we can partner with our energy providers to make this transition.
One of the biggest energy providers in Missoula, Helena, and the rest of Montana is Northwestern Energy. Mineta says Missoula is working on a memorandum of understanding with the utility to formalize a partnership for how the government's climate goals can mesh with Northwestern's energy supply. Mineta says that agreement could be on paper in the next few weeks. Once finalized, it'll be the first agreement of its kind between the state's largest utility provider and a Montana local government over renewable energy supply goals. That's according to Jody Black, a public relations specialist with Northwestern Energy. Black says other agreements like this could be made in the future with local governments in Montana based on their individual energy goals.
It's an opportunity for Northwestern to provide communities with resources needed to meet their sustainability goals with resources that are available within Northwestern Energy.
Black says Northwestern's energy generation across Montana is currently more than 60% carbon-free, made up of wind, hydro, and a little solar. The company has committed to reducing the carbon intensity of its electric energy by 90% by 2045. Black wasn't immediately able to say whether Missoula and Helena's goal of reaching 100% renewable energy to power the areas by 2030 was achievable. I'm Corin Cates-Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.